And Hazrat Fatima taught their children to live peacefully too. Once, the Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, asked Imam Ali alayhi salam, "How did you find Fatima to Zahra?" Imam Ali replied, "Fatima is a help in my servitude to Allah."
زنان، مردان، همسران، کمک همدیگه باشید تو بهشتی کردن همدیگه.
This sentence of Imam Ali alayhi salam means that the spouses must attempt to make each other heavenly. Unfortunately, in today's world, some women complain about their husbands and say, "When we were single at the house of our fathers, we observed our hijab and we acted according to the Islamic rulings. When we got married, our husbands asked us to put away the hijab in front of the non-mahram or talk openly with the stranger man." From this claim of some of the Muslim women, we understand that sometimes the spouses make each other go to hellfire. However, it is ordered in Islam that wife and husband must help each other in servitude to Allah and do not violate His rules. Women must act like Hazrat Fatima to Zahra, who helped Imam Ali alayhi salam in his servitude to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
In the limelight. Firefighters struggle to contain an exploding Northern California wildfire under blazing temperatures as another heat wave blanketed Western United States, prompting an excessive heat warning for inland and desert areas. Death Valley in southeastern California's Mojave Desert reached 128 degrees Fahrenheit, 53 degrees Celsius on Saturday, 10th of July, according to the National Weather Service's reading at Furnace Creek. The shockingly high temperature was actually lower than the previous day, when the location reached 130 degrees Fahrenheit, 54 degrees Celsius. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the Associated Press. The piece is titled, "Firefighters Struggle to Contain Exploding Northern California Wildfire." Firefighters firefighters struggle to contain an exploding Northern California wildfire under blazing temperatures as another heat wave blanketed western United States, prompting an excessive heat warning for inland and desert areas. Death Valley in southeastern California's Mojave Desert reached 128 degrees Fahrenheit or 53 degrees Celsius on Saturday, 10th of July, according to the National Weather Service's reading at Furnace Creek. The shockingly high temperature was actually lower than the previous day, when the location reached 130 degrees Fahrenheit, 54 degrees Celsius. If confirmed as accurate, the 130-degree reading would be the hottest high recorded there since July of 1913, when Furnace Creek Desert heat hit 134 degrees Fahrenheit, 57 degrees Celsius, considered the highest measured temperature on Earth. About 300 miles, or 480 kilometers northwest of the sizzling desert, the largest wildfire of the year in California was raging along the border with Nevada. The Beckwith Complex Fire, a combination of two lightning-caused fires burning 45 miles north of Lake Tahoe, showed no sign of slowing its rush northeast from the Sierra Nevada forest region after doubling in size between Friday and Saturday. Late Saturday, 10th of July, flames jumped Interstate 395 and were threatening properties in Nevada's Washoe County. Take immediate steps to protect large animals and livestock, the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District tweeted. The blaze, which was only 8% contained, increased dramatically to 222 square kilometers as firefighters sweltered in 100-degree temperatures. It was one of several threatening homes across western United States that were expected to see triple-digit heat through the weekend as a high-pressure zone blankets the region. Pushed by strong winds, a wildfire in southern Oregon doubled in size to 120 square miles on Saturday, 10th of July, as it raced through heavy timber in the Fremont-Winema National Forest near the Kalamath County town of Sprague River. The National Weather Service warned the dangerous conditions could cause heat-related illnesses, while California's power grid operator issued a statewide flex alert from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday to avoid disruptions and rolling blackouts. The California Independent System Operator warned of potential power outages and power shortage, not only because of mounting heat, but because a wildfire in southern Oregon was threatening transmission lines that carry imported power to California. Governor Gavin Newsom issued an emergency proclamation on Friday, 9th of July, suspending rules to allow for more power capacity, and the California Independent System Operator requested emergency assistance from other states. On Saturday, Governor Gavin Newsom issued another proclamation allowing the emergency use of auxiliary ship engines to relieve pressure on the electric grid. Palm Springs in Southern California hit a record high temperature of 120 degrees Fahrenheit, 49 degrees Celsius on Saturday. It was the fourth time temperatures have reached 120 degrees so far this year, the Desert Sun reported. In California's agricultural Central Valley, 100-degree temperatures blanketed the region, with Fresno reaching 111 degrees Fahrenheit, 44 degrees Celsius, just 1 degree short of the all-time high for the date. Las Vegas, Nevada, late on Saturday afternoon, tied the all-time record high of 117 degrees Fahrenheit, 47 degrees Celsius, the National Weather Service reported. The city of Las Vegas has recorded that record high temperature four other times, most recently in June of 2017. NV Energy, Nevada's largest power provider, also urged customers to conserve electricity on Saturday and Sunday evenings, 10th and 11th of July, because of the heat wave and wildfires affecting transmission lines throughout the region. In Southern California, a brush fire sparked by a burning big rig in eastern San Diego County forced evacuations of two Native American reservations on Saturday. In north central Arizona, Yavapai County on Saturday lifted an evacuation warning for Black Canyon City, an unincorporated town 43 miles or 66 kilometers north of Phoenix, after a fire in nearby mountains no longer posed a threat. In Mojave County, Arizona, two firefighters died on Saturday after an aircraft they were in to respond to a small wildfire crashed, according to local media reports. A wildfire in southeast Washington grew to almost 60 square miles as it blackened grass and timber while it moved into the Umatilla National Forest. In Idaho, Governor Brad Little declared a wildfire emergency on Friday and mobilized the state's National Guard to help fight fires sparked after lightning storms swept across the drought-stricken region.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Haiti's President Jovenel Moïse was killed during an attack on his private residence in the capital of Port-au-Prince on early Wednesday. Haiti's First Lady was also wounded in the attack and evacuated to a hospital in Miami for treatment. She later accused enemies of sending mercenaries to kill the president and his family to thwart democratic changes in the country. That's why none of the Moïse's guards were injured in the attack. Moreover, Haitian officials have not yet provided a motive for the assassination or explained how the killers got past Moïse's security detail. Haitian police says they have identified 28 people in connection to the fatal shooting, of which two were U.S. citizens. The rest, all Colombian, remain at large. The Colombian Defense Ministry says initial findings suggest that several of the attackers have been retired members of the Colombian military. Colombian police have confirmed that four companies were involved in the assassination of the Haitian president. The companies recruited Colombian nationals who traveled to Haiti through the neighboring Dominican Republic. On the other hand, when pressed on reports that two Haitian Americans were involved with the assassination, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki declined to comment. This arouses suspicions about possible U.S. involvement. After all, the U.S. has a track record when it comes to these types of operations. In 2020, two U.S. citizens were arrested in Venezuela. The Venezuelan president, Nicolas Maduro, accused Washington of plotting to invade his country, overthrow, and assassinate him. Maduro claimed that the invaders were trained and funded by the U.S. and Colombia. Also, there was the infamous Bay of Pigs operation. 50 years ago, a group of some 1,500 Cuban exiles, trained and financed by the CIA, launched an ill-fated invasion of Cuba from the sea in the Bay of Pigs. The plan was to overthrow Fidel Castro and his revolution. Furthermore, the U.S. track record in Haiti speaks volumes in how the U.S. has treated the country. A simple history check reveals the deep U.S. involvement in this tiny island nation. In 1914, the U.S. sent Marines into Haiti. It gained complete control over Haitian finances and the right to intervene in Haiti whenever the U.S. government deemed necessary at the time. The U.S. government also forced the election of a new pro-American president by the Haitian legislature in August 1915. The selection of a president that did not represent the choice of the Haitian populace increased unrest in Haiti. Meanwhile, Haiti has been struggling with a wave of extreme violence, a growing humanitarian crisis, and a worsening coronavirus pandemic, and now the assassination of Moïse has thrown the country into deeper turmoil, as his death leaves a power vacuum.
However, we do know for sure the United States that this solves a lot of problems for the United States regarding its interest in Haiti and their support for Jovenel Moïse and that administration. It was an untenable situation. They had already been supporting him through a very suspect, abolishing of the Constitution. He extended his term. Now he was ruling by decree, and they were about to force on the Haitian people another election and a new constitution under very, circumstances in which the Haitian people didn't want. Clearly, the masses of Haitian people were in the street.
Haitian President Jovenel Moïse's death has led to confusion about who is the legitimate person to lead the country of 11 million people. Claude Joseph, who had resigned as prime minister, took charge of the government and named himself acting president in the hours after the assassination. Ariel Henry, whom Moïse had named prime minister but had not yet taken office, also claims he should be in charge. Furthermore, Joseph Lambert, who leads what remains of the Haitian Senate, joined two others seeking to rule the nation, announced that he was voted provisional president by his fellow senators Friday evening. With tensions high in the capital, crowds of people took to the streets Thursday night, burning cars and demanding justice. Meanwhile, the COVID-19 pandemic has been worsening in Haiti. According to the United Nations Children's Agency, Haiti was the only country in the Western Hemisphere to not have received a single dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. At the same time, according to the World Bank, the country is facing a dire economic situation. Its economy had shrunk further 3.8% in 2020, with about 60% of the population now living in poverty. Furthermore, according to UNICEF, more than 1.5 million children are currently in urgent need of humanitarian assistance in Haiti.
The United States is directly responsible for the situation, decidedly so. It's intentional to keep Haiti underdeveloped, to keep control of its resources and its labor and its markets under the control of foreign corporations.
With Haiti having a track record of interference from Western governments like the U.S. and France, it remains to be seen whether the country will be able to preserve any peace and stability as it goes through this transformation. Moïse's murder has prompted the government to call for U.S. and UN assistance. At this point, the U.S. has said it will only take necessary action to defend Americans and critical infrastructure.
Gun violence is killing more people in the U.S. state of New York than the COVID-19 pandemic. That's according to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. He announced on Thursday that he has declared gun violence in New York a disaster emergency, making extra funding and resources available to combat shootings statewide. The first of its kind executive order came at a time when New York City and the country as a whole are struggling to curtail the spike in gun violence. Speaking during an event at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, Cuomo said his plan includes short-term and long-term measures that treat gun violence as a public health crisis. Cuomo said nearly $139 million will be invested in prevention and employment programs to help youth and keep at-risk young people off the streets.
Track gun violence discriminates. The way COVID discriminated, gun violence discriminates. When you look among the victims of gun violence nationally, 59% non-white. New York State, 68% non-white. New York City, 77% non-white. Think about that, 77%.
Well, these poor Black and Latino neighborhoods and people are likely to be victims because crime is rampant in these communities. But why is crime rampant in these communities? Well, as we see and we know, poverty exacerbates not only just gun violence, but all sorts of violence, petty theft, nonviolent crimes, drugs, gang violence. And these poor Black and Latino neighborhoods have been neglected by the government, by New York State, as well as their neighborhoods have been sold out. Gentrification throughout New York City is specifically targeting neighborhoods in Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx.
Cuomo also announced he was going to sign legislation that allows for civil lawsuits against gun manufacturers, distributors, and dealers for how they market and sell firearms. The governor added that over the 4th of July weekend, at least 51 people fell victim to gun violence across the U.S. state alone. U.S. President Joe Biden announced last month his plan to fight the rising gun crimes across the country.
Today, the department is announcing, as I just did, a major crackdown on stem the flow of guns used to commit violent crimes. It's zero tolerance for gun dealers who willfully violate key existing laws and regulations. Let me repeat, zero tolerance.
His plan includes allocating more funds to law enforcement agencies to improve their ability to track and disrupt gun trafficking. He's set to meet with the country's law enforcement, local elected officials, and advocates to discuss the plan on Monday. The White House says the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package provides funding not only to the police, but also to programs such as youth employment, which can help reduce crime rates. The Democrats and Republicans are now pointing fingers at each other over soaring gun violence, with the GOPs criticizing Biden's performance in fighting crimes and Democrats blaming their political rivals for blocking their proposals on gun control.
The American obsession with guns at its root is because our founding fathers and the right have just made it part of the American identity, make it seem as if to be American is to own a gun, when being American is so much more than that. It's about working hard and defending your neighbor and, you know, wanting better for yourselves.
An FBI report in March pointed to a 25% increase in the number of homicide cases in 2020 compared to a year before. Figures suggest the rising trend has continued into 2021, fueling concerns that the U.S. could witness one of its highest numbers of homicides it has ever recorded this year.
Lebanon is just days away from a social explosion. The stark warning has been made by Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Hassan Diab, who has called on the international community to help the country avoid an all-out economic and social crisis. According to the World Bank, Lebanon is now experiencing one of the worst economic depressions in modern history. Diab has been serving in a caretaker capacity since resigning in the wake of the catastrophic August 4 Beirut port explosion. More than 200 people were killed and over 6,000 others injured in the giant blast. Dozens of people are still unaccounted for. Since then, politicians have been unable to agree on a new government. I appeal through you to the kings, princes, presidents, and leaders of brotherly and friendly countries. And I call upon the United Nations and all international bodies, the international community, and the global public opinion to help save the Lebanese from death and prevent the demise of Lebanon. Diab has urged friendly nations to help Lebanon despite the lack of a new government. He said only a new cabinet could restart talks with the International Monetary Fund so that the country may get out of its deepening crisis.
Linking aid to Lebanon with government formation has started to threaten the lives of people and to the Lebanese entity because the pressures that are being exercised and the siege imposed on Lebanon do not affect the corrupt. Instead, it is the Lebanese people who pay the heavy price that threatens their lives and their future.
Amid the political standoff, occasional unrest marked by attacks on government buildings, and the torching of banks and financial institutions by certain elements has sparked warnings of what's to come. Lebanon is now on the brink of total collapse. Anger over fuel shortages has spilled into fights at petrol stations since the country is short of fuel. The national currency has now lost more than 90% of its value since October 2019. The country's gross domestic product dropped from close to $55 billion in 2018 to an estimated $33 billion last year. GDP per capita also plummeted by around 40%. The nation's unemployment rate spiked from 28% in February 2020 to nearly 40% by the end of the year.
It's because the whole economic crisis is manufactured. The central bank manager is controlled by the United States, and all the banks have also loyalty to the United States. And so over the last 2.5 years, these banks moved out close to $60 billion out of the country, which crashed the lira. And now all that money is in Switzerland. Nobody's being held responsible.
The crisis has worsened, with the central bank cutting back on financing imports with subsidized dollars. The crisis is mostly linked to the sanctions that the U.S. and its allies have imposed on Lebanon, as well as foreign intervention in the Arab nation's domestic affairs.
While the United States has been trying for more than 15 years, and even more than that, to corner Hezbollah in Lebanon and get the population to rise up against it. It didn't work in 2006 in the war directly with apartheid Israel.
Over 250 of Washington's sanctions targets are in Lebanon or related to the country, and this number has been growing quickly. U.S. sanctions have seriously undermined the stability of the banking sector by reducing the inflow of foreign capital.
So the purposeful crashing of the economy and making life harder for Lebanese people, the United States is hoping that the population in Lebanon would rise up against Hezbollah. And as we've heard from Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah will try its best to make sure that this plan doesn't work.
Saudi Arabia has also imposed its own sanctions, including banning its citizens from traveling to Lebanon, where Riyadh-backed elements have been jockeying for position.
Iran has been a major victim of terrorism over the past decades, with over 17,000 Iranians losing their lives in terrorist attacks. Iran has long criticized Western states, especially the United States, for employing double standards in dealing with terrorism. The West's support for anti-Iran terrorist group Mujahideen-e Khalq organization, also known as the MKO, is a case in point. The notorious Mujahideen-e Khalq organization is responsible for the killing of about 12,000 Iranian people and officials since the Islamic Revolution of 1979. The group has carried out bombings and assassinations across Iran. The MKO is a well-known enemy of the Iranian nation with a horrific record that is known to all countries in the region and beyond. During the Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s, the MKO joined forces with former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein to carry out cross-border attacks. They also helped the former Iraqi dictator to crack down on dissent at home. After the war, MKO members spent many years in a camp in Iraq's Diyala province before being relocated to Albania in 2016. The cult-like group does not tolerate any form of dissent within the organization. Former MKO members who managed to leave the group have painted a grim picture of how the organization treats its members, especially those who intend to leave the MKO. They have reported abuses ranging from solitary confinements to severe beatings and torture. Over the past years, MKO summits have been attended by hawkish U.S. politicians such as former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and former Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich. The U.S. politicians are said to have received hefty sums to attend MKO summits and back the group's calls for regime change in Iran. Observers believe the American and European stances regarding the MKO have exposed their double standards in dealing with terrorism.
When they say that they want to fight terrorist organizations, what they mean is they want to fight every sort of organization that is in any way an obstacle in the further benefit of Western hegemony We have seen the term terrorism being used over and over and over again to assign any and every sort of organization, even the ones that are not even violent, any sort of organization that opposes imperialism.
The Mujahideen-e Khalq organization was on the U.S. list of terrorist groups for 15 years, but then removed in 2012 to pave the way for the MKO to receive funds more easily. Iran says lobbies in the United States were heavily bribed that year to facilitate the controversial removal. Major European countries, including France, also removed it from their blacklists. Top MKO members, including its public face, Maryam Rajavi, have been moving closer to hawkish U.S. politicians. The deepening ties between U.S. and European governments and Mujahideen-e Khalq terror group suggests that the West may be trying to use the MKO to pressure Iran.
It is not surprising, unfortunately, to see such a close collusion between the MKO and the United States of America. We have seen this happen for the past 30, 40 years, and this has become very clear a couple of years ago, of course, when they held a massive rally in which they invited people such as John Bolton and Rudy Giuliani, some of the most imperialist war hawks that the United States has ever known in the past, let's say, century. So when they attend meetings of the MKO and when they speak there of what they consider the need for, quote-unquote, spreading democracy to Iran, this is what they are trying to achieve, the resurgence of U.S. imperialist control.
How can Western states be supporting this notorious terrorist group and at the same time accuse other countries of backing terrorism?
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به وقت حالا.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, we're going to continue discussing Imam Khomeini's testament. As a reminder, we said that Imam Khomeini considered the Islamic revolution separate from other revolutions, in that it had a divine motive and pursues lofty goals of Islam through unity of the people. The father of the Islamic revolution emphasized the safeguarding of the revolution and the Islamic Republic system is the greatest obligatory act. In today's program, we're going to touch upon his concerns about the enemy's conspiracies to disappoint the people from Islam and undermine their unity. Please stay with us. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, used to say that among the conspiracies of the enemies is to demonstrate Islam as inefficient to adapt itself to the problems of the modern world and to tackle problems of contemporary man. He used to warn the masses and scholars that two groups of people are trying to depict Islam as unable to solve social and political problems. The first group ignorantly considers Islam far from the social and political arenas of human life, and the second group wickedly denies the political identity of this religion. The Imam wrote in his testament, "One of the important plots which can be seen, especially during the contemporary decades and particularly after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, is the widespread propaganda with different dimensions to disappoint the nation, especially the selfless Iranian nation, from Islam. Sometimes they say ineptly and expressly that the laws of Islam that have been passed 1,400 years ago cannot administer countries in the modern era, or that Islam is a reactionary religion and opposed to any innovation and civilization, and that in the modern era you cannot keep countries away from global civilization and its manifestations. Such foolish and occasionally sly and devilish propagandas are forged in the form of advocacy of Islam by raising issues like saying that Islam and other divine religions are engaged in spirituality, worshipping and praying, and government and politics are against their spiritual aim and purpose. And sadly, the second type of propaganda, separation of religion from politics, has affected some religious scholars or ulama and religious people who are unaware of Islam to the extent that they even consider interference in government and politics as sin and transgression. This is a great catastrophe that Islam has been suffering from. Founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, made it clear that individual and social laws of Islam do not become outdated with the passage of time. Imam Khomeini reiterated that this claim is like saying that the laws of mathematics change with time. He wrote in his testament, "As for the first group, it should be said that they are either unaware of government, law, and politics, or they partially feign being unaware, because execution of laws on the basis of justice and prevention of injustice and oppressive rule and spread of individual and social justice and prohibition of corruption, indecency and various kinds of waywardness and freedom based on the criterion of intellect, justice and independence and prevention of colonialism, exploitation and worship of others instead of God and implementation of divine fixed rules, retaliation and specific rules on the basis of justice and fairness, and hundreds of the like are not the things to become outdated with the passage of time. In the history of mankind and social life, this is quite clear. This dispute is like saying that the laws of physics, the laws of science, and the laws of mathematics change with the passage of time, and that other rules should replace them. Claiming that Islam is opposed to innovation is no more than a foolish allegation, because if the manifestation of civilization mean inventions and advanced industries, Islam and no other monotheistic religion have been or will ever be opposed to it. Rather, science and industry are emphasized in Islam and the noble Quran. Khomeini, may God bless his soul, also said in his testament, "As for the second group who design sly schemes and consider Islam separate from rule of politics, these ignorant people should be told that the Holy Quran and the practice of the Messenger of God, blessings of God upon him and his messenger, have so many laws on rule and politics that they exceed other areas. It is rather due to negligence of many ritual political laws of Islam that have caused these catastrophes. The Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, formed a ruling like other ruling systems in the world, but with the motive of spreading social justice. That the first caliphs of Islam had vast rules and the rule of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, was founded more vastly with the same motive are among the axioms of history. And after that, gradually the ruling system was in the name of Islam, and now too there are many who claim to follow Islam and the Holy Prophet, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in Islamic ruling system." Imam Imam Khomeini also wrote in his testament, "I hope all writers, socialists, and historians will take Muslims out of this mistake. What has been said, that the messengers were engaged in spirituality and government and the affairs of world, are rejected, and that the divine messengers and saints would refrain from them, and thus we should also follow them, is an unfortunate mistake, whose consequences are to corrupt the Islamic nations and opening the way for the bloodthirsty colonialism. Because what is rejected are the satanic, dictatorial, and oppressive rules, which have been prevented due to seeking dominance and pervert worldly motives that they had. But the rightful rule for the benefit of the downtrodden and prevention of oppression and injustice and for establishment of social justice is the same principle, for instance, of Prophet Solomon, the son of David, peace be upon him, and Grand Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and his great legatees would try for it. This is among the greatest obligations, and the maintenance of it is among the loftiest worships, as the healthy politics that existed in these rules is among the necessary affairs."
The light.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sia dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sia said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers, is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rush to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance as historic and funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital, Lima, has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca cap to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo-goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This very baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels. The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now, a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled, electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It is 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything, from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfishbot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible, because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash-collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history. A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Rani, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Rani has no physical problems, but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Rani is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a 4-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms, but ours weighs only 26. So we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied to the Guinness World Records. They replied to us saying they will investigate within 90 days.
The tiny cow has also caused tourist frenzy in the South Asian country as thousands are flocking to Dhaka to take a glance despite coronavirus restrictions. The owner says over 15,000 people come to visit her in just 3 days. The dwarf cow has also gone viral on social media. A nearly 22-meter high sand sculpture in Denmark has set a new Guinness record as the world's tallest sandcastle. The sculpture has been constructed with nearly 5 tons of sand. It's made in the shape of a triangle, and a wood structure stabilizes it. More than 30 artists from different countries have worked on the project, carving intricate details on the castle's wall. Its makers say a nod to the coronavirus pandemic was also made at the top of that construction. They say that's because the virus has controlled the lives of people over the past months. The sand piece broke the previous Guinness record that belonged to an 18-meter-high sandcastle in Germany.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An adorable baby elephant has become a web celebrity after she was caught on camera using a muddy hill as playground slide. Footage shows the little elephant excitedly approaching a hill with a smooth path leading downward. The baby then goes on all fours to have the time of her life sliding on her belly down the hill, taking full advantage of rain. The toddler, named Yishong, is only 3 years old. She lives at a rescue center in China, one of the major habitats for wild Asian elephants in the country.
A French company has taken the process of pizza making to a whole new level by creating a robot chef. The robot named Patsy is completely autonomous. The machine, now working in a pizzeria in Paris, is capable of taking orders, making a pizza from scratch and serving it. Having three arms, the robot can make 120 pizzas in an hour, which is 13 times faster than a human chef.
We are in a very fast process with a perfect control of time and quality, since we have a constancy offered by robotics and then an environment that is quite cool and relaxed. The idea is also to spend a few pleasant minutes washing the robot while you wait for your pizza to be made.
It took designers 8 years to develop the machine, which is claimed to be the first pizza-making robot in the world. They hope to use the technology to open robotics-run restaurants that can function round the clock. In China, scientists are happy that the world's first artificially bred leaf monkey is doing well 2.5 months after being born. The rare monkey was born at a research and protection center in Wuzhou City in April. Its birth took place several days earlier than the due date, and the baby was relatively weak at birth. However, thanks to its parents and caretakers, it has grown in a normal way. Scientists say the baby monkey is now in a good condition and its behavior is totally normal.
It is very important in terms of the cytic value. It has been growing up normally. In addition, we have found that it has a curiosity about the world and always shows some exploratory and learning behaviors. In general, it is in very good physical condition.
The center's scientists say another leaf monkey that was born in April is doing well too. These monkeys are the eighth generation of leaf monkeys that have been bred in captivity. Their successful births have raised hope amongst the scientists of saving a species that is one of China's most endangered wild animals. Imagine the hungriest you've ever been. How many hot dogs could you possibly gobble down in 10 minutes? An American man has done 76. Professional eater Joey Chestnut broke the world record in the International Hot Dog Eating Contest on Brooklyn's Coney Island. The 37-year-old managed to devour the first 30 hot dogs in only 3 minutes. The impressive win marked his 14th victory at the annual contest. He held the previous record, which was only one sausage sandwich, less than his 2021 record. Astronauts at China's space station have successfully carried out the country's first spacewalk. Two astronauts exited the core module of Tiangong to examine the station's robotic arm. They also elevated a panoramic camera and tested new generation spacesuits. The mission lasted 7 hours. According to the China Manned Space Agency, another spacewalk will be conducted soon. In June, three Chinese astronauts blasted off to become the first crew of the Tiangong station. They will remain there for 3 months. Lionel Messi is one of the most popular football players with millions of fans from across the world, but the legendary player enjoys special love and affection in his hometown. Local artists at Rosario relished the chance to honor Messi in a mural on a four-story building. The 14-meter high and 8-meter wide giant artwork stands opposite of the school Messi attended in his childhood. The mural depicts him as both an adult and a child. Messi had been the top scorer in European football leagues multiple times. He also received the world's best player award for a record 6 times. The 34-year-old currently holds the Argentinian national team's captaincy. Pangolins might look tough with their scaly armor, but they are in fact highly vulnerable animals. A Vietnamese man is dedicating his time and energy to making sure they are safe. 39-year-old Thai has been protecting pangolins since his boyhood when he saw one brutally hunted by his neighbors. The bitter experience inspired him to find or make a group devoted to saving the endangered species. Save Vietnam's Wildlife has over 60 staff and has so far rescued around 1,600 pangolins. Thai says seeing the rescued animals return to nature is the best part of his job.
The most wonderful moments in the lives of all of the conservationists at my center are the moments that we witness the rescued pangolins getting out from the transportation cages and slowly walking into the forest, because the forest is their true home, where they can have the joy of living their lives in their own way.
Pangolins are one of the most trafficked mammals in the world. Their number have fallen due to illegal trade. The animals, now critically endangered, could once be found in the rainforests across Asia and Africa. They use their sticky tongues to hunt for ants, termites, and similar prey. Pandemic has not stopped this British musician from holding live concerts. His audience is a very special group in Danish rural areas. Jacob Shaw, a university professor, is the man behind this experiment. He says playing for the animals has been his second best option after the pandemic forced the cancellation of many events and social gatherings. Shaw says the performance for the cows has been so rewarding that he wants to continue it even after public spaces are reopened. He says the cows seem to enjoy classical music very much.
They react differently to different pieces. We played something that was slightly more upbeat, a little bit more modern, and a lot of them didn't like it and they went away. And I think that the type of pieces which is closer to their voice, closer to their mooing, which could be similar actually to a cello, which is why it's so successful with them, they prefer that.
The cello player is sometimes accompanied by other musicians. They say the experience has helped them practice and also relieve some of the stress of a live concert.
IRIB English Radio.